Hi, everybody. Welcome to yet another special edition. We have a lot of special editions here on SecurityGuyTV.com. My special guest today, Pam Paziotopoulos, DVPolicy.org. Pam, welcome back to the show. Now, I notice you're not in dreary Chicago. You're in bright, sunny Hollywood, California.
Yes,
is that correct?
And you know how much I love being in L.A., so
well, keep that to yourself.
Such a pleasure.
We don't need more people here, but having said that, glad to see you. So we're broadcasting from the Security Guy TV studio here in Hollywood.
Which is fabulous, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Fabulous studio. I didn't realize one of my favorite shows was taped here, too, as well, so that makes it a little more fun, too.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's a really cool place. Very historical. Yeah. Columbia Studios was here. They've done a lot of famous movies. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, for example, that kind of thing, on the waterfront. Really a cool place. Now, we haven't talked in a while, and I'm so glad to have you on because you've started a not-for-profit organization called DVPolicy.org. That's domesticpolicy.org. Through the Center for Domestic Policy. No,
Center for Domestic Violence Policy.
There you go. I'm glad you said it.
We were lucky that DVPolicy.org was available. I think it's nice and easy for people to remember.
Yeah, I agree. Now, tell us what you guys do.
So three things, basically, you know, information, education, and legislation. So basically the website, and we're working on it every day to make sure that it's up to date and thorough, just a place for people to get information on domestic violence. And second, you know, we also do, as you and I have done, so much training together, right, on training for corporations on how domestic violence infiltrates the workplace. You break up with somebody, they don't know where you live anymore, but they know where you work, right? Work hours, location, how you get to work, the workplace becomes a target. And as you know, Chuck, three women a day are killed by their intimate partner.
Three are killed a day? Wow.
Three are killed a day. In 2017, we still have those drastic statistics. And, you know, I mean, a lot of times it happens at the workplace.
Yeah, I think it's as much as 40% of all workplace violence has a domestic violence component. Is that number still true?
Absolutely. And hey, you're the security guy guru. You know, as you know, when we've surveyed the security directors at some of the Fortune 500 companies, you know, 94% of them say that the number one problem they handle every single day is ex-partners, right? Showing up in the parking lot, calling, bothering their exes.
Right. Now, specifically, this piece you're doing with domestic violence policy, mm-hmm. It's kind of what you did before, but tell us what made you turn it into the nonprofit. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, I thought before, you know, it was just an independent consulting that I was doing after I left the state's attorney's office, but I thought this would be a way to reach a lot more people, to have the business model be a not-for-profit. It's a way for, you know, corporations to feel as though they can kind of give back. And they can donate to a not-for-profit, and in exchange, they can get some really great training and up-to-date legislative information about domestic violence, which has really become a problem in the workplace. You know, it's a serious business issue.
Well, it is, and an average lawsuit, if I remember correctly, for a security violation, let's say, you know, something you did or didn't do, that you should have done, you're talking a minimum, I think it's at $12 million now?
Oh,
something like that. Yeah.
Just think about it. You know, in Chicago a couple of years ago, we had a woman that was killed. She was working at the Nordstrom right off Michigan Avenue, and she was killed by her ex in the Nordstrom in the accessory department. So you could just imagine, right, the fallout for something like that.
Now, you're going to be offering, which I think is really cool, kind of a membership's not the right word. Tell me what it is you're going to offer to people if they join the organization. They're going to get some training out of this if they join and contribute, correct?
Absolutely. So if you go to our DVPolicy.org website and you click on support, you will see the various memberships that are offered to corporations or organizations. And depending on, you know, what you're looking for, you can sign up for a different type of membership. But all, you know, they're going to encompass training. And with your help, too, we're going to be doing live streaming.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I will set up a live stream for your organization as far as my contribution. And let's say your company has 5,000 employees all around the country. Let's say they got 100,000. We'll set up a live stream with a private login that you can send out to all your employees. And no matter where they are, if they're on their phone or if they're at the baseball game, if they're at work, as long as they can get a connection on their phone, they can watch the training and log in and qualify for credit, and that helps go a long way to compliance. And, you know, it's almost impossible to train, you know, 200 employees or 50 employees. There's a cost issue involved in overtime, But in a lot of states, you can pay people a different wage for training. You're not making them come in on overtime and stuff. And so we're here at SecurityGuideTV.com. Very excited to help you with that initiative and get that going.
Oh, I can't thank you enough, Chuck. We're really, really excited to be able to offer this service to our members. I think it's going to go a long way because, as you said, it's really hard to get everybody. You know, people are starting, as much as I love live training because I think you can really connect with people and interact with them, the bottom line is it's just not the way of the world anymore. And it's impossible to kind of get everybody together in one place. So this is a great alternative, I think.
Now, tell us about some of the fundraising. You had a recent fundraising event in Chicago, right?
We did, and it sold out a few weeks before the event, which was really exciting for our first fundraiser.
Yeah, and you raised a good amount of money. That was great.
We did.
Great that it sold out. Anything on the horizon? Any other fundraising?
Yeah, we're going to have a fundraiser in the fall, probably sometime in October. We have a new chair, a young, beautiful woman that's heading up. Her name's Alexandra Ziogas, and she's going to be heading up our fundraising efforts, and along with our chairperson, Mark Farah. They're planning some really exciting things for the fundraisers. So,
now you're an attorney,
yes.
And you're also a professor at a university or college at back east, right?
Yeah, at Kent Law School. I teach domestic violence and the law. This will be my ninth year.
Wow, that's fabulous. Now let's get some street creds here because you have a really extensive background on this. So tell people, you know, how you got started in this. You had one of the first domestic violence prosecution units in Illinois, is that correct?
Yeah, so I was a state's attorney for about 5 years, and then I had resigned from the office. I moved to Washington, D.C., right when the Violence Against Women Act passed the first time. And I basically was on the road, went to 38 states in a year, Indian reservations, rural communities. And then a new state's attorney was elected in Chicago, Dick Devine, and he wanted to start a formal domestic violence division within the office. Somebody told him about me. He brought me back from Washington. And we started the division. We grew it to 40 lawyers. It's still in existence today.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, you know, the Chicago police get almost 600 calls of domestic violence a day.
A day?
A day.
Wow.
So you can just imagine. But we really instituted a lot of interesting programs, and they've got a brand new building. It's a beautiful, brand new building, real state of the art. So I'd like to think Chicago's got a lot of, you know, the best practices when we're talking about the prosecution of domestic violence cases.
That's excellent. Any new laws, either national or locally, you can share
what?
With
well,
people?
I'm trying to work on some stuff, you know, as you know, because you and I have worked in so many different organizations that, like I said, you know, it's really a business issue. And women really don't come out to their workforce, right? You know, they're getting orders of protection. They're putting the address of their workplace, but they're not telling security, right?
Right.
I mean, you probably, when you were a security guard, you know, you didn't even know about half of the people that were being stalked by their exes. Is that true?
I mean, well, no, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
In fact, they really seldom tell you for all kinds of reasons, embarrassment, trust.
Sure.
They're afraid of retaliation from their husband or wife, depending on who the person is. And it is very difficult to get them to speak. However, I have found, and I'm sure you found this true, too, once you kind of make this quasi-public, in other words, let's say there's a meeting, let's say there's a group session and some training, and somebody raises their hand and says, oh, you know, I've had that happen too. People come forward.
Every time we do a training, right?
Right.
A couple days later, somebody, you know, it's like clockwork. You know, this is the thing. They just need to get permission from their workplace.
Exactly.
Like, it's okay. Disclose this. We're not going to fire you. We're not going to demote you or discriminate against you. But we want to keep you safe and everybody else safe. You know, take that Nordstrom case. You know, if they had said something like that to her, maybe she would have disclosed it, given a photograph. You know, that guy blew by two security guards. So maybe he could have been nabbed if they knew to look for him. The problem, and same thing with the San Bernardino shooting, right? Her ex went into the office, I think, to even get a pass to go down to her classroom. So, you know, it's just creating that culture in your organization where people feel comfortable. What I'm working on in Chicago with our lobbyist, Dan Johnson, he's doing a great job. We're trying to, and Representative Camille Lilly, we're trying to work on some kind of posting. So, you know, you're in the lunchroom, you look up, you see a posting that's really clear about the fact that, hey, you know, you can disclose this without being discriminated against.
Well, that's important. I've always thought that if you kind of make this quasi-public, you will immediately have a team of people to come to your aid to help you. And nothing can make you more safe than if each person individually accepts responsibility for their personal safety. If everybody in the organization accepted personal responsibility for their own safety, that makes everybody standing next to you safer. The tragedy in domestic violence is, if you don't disclose this in the workplace, you've now made everybody standing next to you unsafe, because if knucklehead shows up to do something to you, you have not told anybody about it, they're in potential harm's way. On the other hand, if everybody knew about the guy coming, they can all stop him. Or her. Well, we can say her these days, too, because that happens as well. And I think this is a very important thing that people overlook. They rely on the security guard to stop them. They rely on the police to stop them. It's not going to happen. It will never happen. The police and security guard will not stop them. But your coworker that has 3 seconds to say there he is at the door, that can stop him for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Here's the problem, though. A lot of women have told me that they don't even realize how dangerous the situation really is. You know, in that San Bernardino case, you know, he was posting on Facebook, you know, things like ISIS and guns and, you know, really crazy stuff. And she thought, well, maybe he's just doing that to get attention. You know,
right.
They don't really understand how lethal the situation really is. And it's interesting, as you and I have gone into so many places doing training and we talk about lethality assessment, what are the red flags, right? And people hear those red flags. I had a woman, you know, last month that was in the audience and came up to me afterwards and said, you know what? She goes, I always knew things weren't, you know, really quite right. But oh my God, I've got about 10 of those red flags going on right now. I guess my situation's a lot more serious than I originally anticipated.
Yeah, I have a family member going through this real time as we speak. Complete denial. I said, if you go back to that house, you're probably going to die eventually. Well, I'm not really sure. Maybe. What am I? What's happening? You know, and this has been going on for years. And I keep saying you're at the end of the road where there's no other option but for violence to be put upon you because of the way the situation is. And I can't convince them. And I'm kind of sad about that. So we're monitoring the situation every single minute of the day, literally, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
And sometimes, you know, you do the best you can. And what I would tell people that are family members involved with their, you know, let's say their family member is a victim. All I can tell you is it's a 24-hour job to be diligent and be there to help them and just show that support and make sure they know it's okay to leave that circle they're in, that violent circle, to step outside that and come into your circle. Maybe they're going to sleep on your couch for 2 months. That's okay. Worse things, right, than sleeping on a couch.
Oh, and you know, the whole thing is not to be judgmental. You know,
that's
people
right.
always ask me, so if I'm working with somebody and, you know, I think they're going through an abusive situation, you know, how do I approach them? And I always say, you know, probably one of the best things I think you can say that's most effective, that's not judgmental, is, you know what? I worry about your safety. I worry about you, and I worry about your safety.
Right.
And just kind of leave it like that, right? And eventually they will come around, you know. And open up to you.
And I add to that, you know, not that I need to personally worry, but I say that, you know, I'm concerned.
Sure.
I'm concerned that I'm going to become a victim because I'm defending you. So let's work together on this and come up. There is no easy solution, by the way. I'm not saying this to make it sound easy because it is anything but easy. And
well, you know, you're like me, right? You handle all different kinds of
right.
cases before you started specializing. And I can tell you that when the offender is someone that the victim knows, it's the most complicated. Same thing,
in, oh, yeah.
right? Sexual assault, right? If the offender is someone that the victim knew or is an acquaintance or this or that, it just makes it so complicated.
And it's almost, there's almost no answer to it sometimes, seemingly. I mean, you almost say, I'm not sure I can do anything about this. But you do have to participate. You have to try. That's really the whole secret. And, of course, DVPolicy.org is doing that by getting the word out that there's ways you can put domestic violence policies inside your company, inside your organization, make you 40% safer, right, just right off the bat, because a workplace violence has a 40% component of domestic violence policy. So if you eliminated the domestic violence in your organization, you may lower your chances of having an active shooter by 40%. That's a big gain. And by the way, it's a no-brainer, right? So if you're not doing this, your parents didn't raise any smart kids. That's all I got to say. All right? I'm serious, right? And, you know, why aren't you doing it? Oh, it
right.
costs money. You know what? It's not costing you money now. Pam has an organization that can give you that information. You know, she runs on donations. So you send in a donation and you get a tax write-off and you're going to get some training. You're going to get some policy. You're going to get some online training through live stream. It's a no-brainer, right? So it's time for everybody to throw out those old ways and really get behind this and start saying, listen, oh, we got to do it. It's just, it's the right thing to do, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Chuck, for this opportunity to be here today. It's great to be back in the studio again.
Yeah, Pam Pasiotopoulos, dvpolicy.org. You notice how easily I said that name. I got a lot of practice
just
on
it. Rolls right off your tongue off now, right?
So join her at dvpolicy.org, shoot her an email, find her contact information and social media information on her page, and also visit her at dvpolicy on Facebook, is your Facebook page as well. Right? So, Pam, next time you're in town, let's set this up. In fact, with this technology, we can catch you in Chicago. I can put the Chicago skyline behind you. We can start doing this from Chicago, and let's make it a regular thing. I'd really like to have you on the show on a regular basis.
Well, that sounds great, and I think we can really protect a lot of people. You know, you and I, with your law enforcement background and my prior state's attorney background, we were always stuck in that just reacting right after something had happened.
That's right.
And now for many, many years, both of us have been on the prevention side. I'd much rather be on this side.
Absolutely. Pam Pasiotopoulos, dvpolicy.org. Check them out on the web. And until next time, we'll see you later from securityguytv.com.
Thanks, Chuck.